I'm Wendell. I'm living love by Jesus. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse and addiction to food and work and control. Robbie's really helping me with my food thing, and we're working on it. If I don't get some help, my health is going down, so I've got to do something. And I appreciate your support on that. But I've had issues with porn, with alcohol, with rage and panic and depression. So I'm always working on the next thing, and so right now we're using the workbooks in our midweek sessions that we just taught on, the Good Father. And so now I'm working on the next set of workbooks that we'll use this summer. It's Help, I'm Angry. It's a four-part series, and we're probably going to try it co-ed. I'm not sure, but we'll see. We'll see how that works. But I had a lesson on anger because I've been working on that. I blogged on it Monday, and a blog that, by the way, John Seth set up. So you can tell John Seth thank you for that. Yeah, I use that blog. He said it's a Wix blog, but anyway, so I blogged on that, and I was all ready to talk about anger tonight. And don't laugh at me for what I watch on Friday night, but I didn't used to really like it a whole lot, but here lately they've kind of changed the way they do it. But we've been watching Blue Bloods. Is anybody, Tom Selleck and his whole family is in the police thing, and they've really made it much more redemptive and much more grace-filled and grace-based. And I'll give you the story of what happened. If you follow the show, Jamie, the youngest, who is married to a police officer who works for him, he came in on the midst of a rookie cop who was trying to deal with this lady who had gone crazy. She was on drugs and gone crazy in a coffee shop or something, and they were having an altercation. She actually pushed the cop, which is a felony. And so Jamie came in and stopped it, short-circuited it instantly, and said, I'll handle this. The rookie cop got mad and left the department and everything. Well, it went all the way up to Dad, the captain. Went all the way up to here. What Jamie had done was way out of protocol. You're not, cops don't do that. They don't come in and take over. And Jamie, he kept asking him, why did you do that? You know, if you're not going to tell me as the police chief, tell me as your dad, why'd you do that? And Jamie just kept saying, that's all I've got to say about it. It's all. And you knew that Jamie knew this lady. The show had revealed that he knew this lady. She was obviously on drugs and obviously crazed in her thinking and her actions. And so it went all the way through the show, and he had to take disciplinary action against his own son because of what he had done. And, on the backside of it, the police chief did some investigating and found out who the lady was and checked her backstory out. To shrink it all down, what had happened is that she had saved Danny's life, the brother, the older brother, had saved his life in Iraq. She was in the military. She was dealing with PTSD and medicating with drugs to try to, you know, deal with it. But in Iraq, she had saved the middle son, Danny. She had saved his life. And Jamie knew that. And so he was willing to take it on the chin to try to protect this lady. I'm going to start crying. It was so meaningful to me. It just hit me. So the punishment for Jamie was to go work in some kind of soup kitchen or something. I don't know what it was. But that you have to do public service to pay for what, because you messed up as a cop. So he's working there. And the lady comes in. I'm not sure why she showed up. Maybe I fell asleep during that moment. She came into the soup kitchen, and so Jamie was there, and then Danny shows up, and then the chief of police, you know, Tom Selleck, he shows up. He always saunters in, you know, in his big. And she realized what the deal was, that this family was trying to save her because she had saved their son. And here's what got me. She sits down with the chief of police of New York City, and she said, I don't matter. My life doesn't matter. And I'm never going to amount to anything.
And he looked at her and he said, I see you. That moment just gripped me. And I thought, oh my gracious, that is what Jesus does with us. That is what God does with us, is the world tells us we're this. We look in the mirror and we tell ourselves we're this. Our parents tell us we're this. Our siblings, our bosses, the toxic people in our life say, you are this. And Jesus stands in front of us and he says, I see you. I see who you really are. And you're not who they said you were. And you're not who you were brought up thinking you were. I see you. And I thought, well, Robbie reminded me several times. She said, well, yeah, everybody wants to be seen. Not, look, I'm up on a table dancing, look at me seen. But everybody wants, I want you to see who I'm trying to be and who I want to be and who this core person is who can't, I can't live my life out because of my addictions or because of my codependency or because of my fears or because of my anger or because of, you know, whatever else. Somebody please see who I really am on the inside. And that's so true. We all want to be seen. But I went the other way with it as I was sitting there and I thought, oh God, help me do what Tom Selleck, the actor, just did at this show. I want to see people. I want to see people for who they really are. God's in everybody. If that's not your theology, I'm really sorry. But that's my theology. I believe that God is in everybody. Well, they have to be saved first. No, I think God's in everybody. We're all his kids. We all are a little close. Some are closer, some are more distant. But we're all his kids, and God is in everybody. That's the way he put his DNA in us at the beginning. We're made in his image. And when I look at people, I want to see that in them. I want to see the image of God in them. But they act out. They talk dirty. They look funny. They're socially inept. They're blah, blah, blah. You know, they lie all the time. They hurt people. They whatever. No, I want to see God in them when I look at them. So I got to thinking, there are three things that came to my mind. One is that my problem through my life, the reason I haven't seen God in people, the reason I haven't seen who they really are, the essence of who they really are, is the first thing, and is that I looked at them judicially, or I looked at them critically, or I looked at them judgmentally. However you want to say it. Do you get what I'm saying? I'm picking them apart. I'm dissecting them, and I'm trying to find something that is wrong with them that needs to be indicted, that needs to be arrested. You see what I'm saying? I'm looking at them, because when I do that, it makes me feel better about myself. If I can find something wrong with you, it makes me feel a little more right about me. And Loretta will attest to this. We were brought up in a home where that happened all the time. I was brought up to do that. That's what you're supposed to do. We were the righteous preacher's family in town, and we looked down on everybody else. That's how I was trained. It's what I was brought up to do. We go to this church. My dad's the pastor. So, and I didn't know it was my natural. It was my normal. It was my default setting, is the way I was trained. And as I went through life, I thought, somehow this is not working. Somehow this is not hurting them. This is hurting me. And this is creating a very toxic situation in my brain and in my heart to be so critical and to be so judgmental, so judicial. You keep score. I did something nice for them. They did not return the favor. I said something nice. They didn't say thank you. I held the door for them. They didn't show appreciation. I gave them five. They only gave me one back. I caught them lying. I caught them stealing. I caught them hurting somebody. I caught them doing this or that. So I'm just constantly, I'm not pointing the finger at you, but let's get honest. Once somebody gets on our shit list, we're going to find every little picky thing we can about them. Everything they do is wrong. Why'd they wear those clothes? Why'd they go over here? Why'd they eat at that restaurant? Why'd they talk to that person? Every little, their tone of voice wasn't right. They looked at me funny. And once we adopt that mindset, we cannot see that person anymore. Everything that we, the lenses that we're looking through are these judgmental, critical, harsh lenses. So everything they do, everything they say or don't do or don't say, we see through these harsh, critical lenses. We don't see them. We can't see them. We're looking through these weird lenses that skew their reality before it gets to our brain. So there's no way that we can really see them and hear them and know who they really are, because we're viewing everything they do and say through this critical lens that skews it all. You know, when you go to the carnivals and stuff, and they have these rooms of mirrors, and they'll be all squiggly, and they'll make you look way taller than you are or way fatter than you are, you know. I always thought it made me look better than I was, but I don't know why. But that, I mean, if you think about going through life, and it's not a mirror but a lens, and so everybody you look at, you're not seeing the true reflection of who they are. You're just seeing this skewed lens. So when Selleck looks at this drug addict girl and he says, "I see you," he was not looking through a policeman's eyes. And by rights, those are the eyes he's supposed to look at people through, but he wasn't. He was looking at her through other eyes, not the policeman, judicial, critical, harsh, judgmental eyes. And I think I have to ask myself, you all deal with it however you want to, but I have to ask myself, what is the payback for that to me? Why do I do that? And the only answer I can come up with is, well, it makes me feel better about myself. It makes me feel bigger than I really am. It makes me feel more righteous than I really am. It makes me, you know, because if I can make you look small, it makes me look big. If I can make you look wrong, it makes me look right. Is that a... Stop and think about that. In Pathway, where our whole goal is to try to be honest, is that a game we want to play? We're playing games with our own brains, and we're buying it. We're buying the lie we're telling ourselves. It's just silly. It's just silly. It's childish. It's juvenile. And it's denial, 101. It's just living in denial. So I think that's one reason that we can't see people. One reason we can't see them is because we're looking through the judicial, judgmental lenses. Here's another one that is much more prevalent in a community like this, in the Pathway community. I'm going to get to everybody, so don't anybody think I'm picking on you. But over half of us here tonight are women. So there is a matronly, attitude, whether you're a mother or not. I think all females are born with this idea of nurture and care. Men have no idea what it is to grow a child inside of them. Men have no idea what it is to suckle a child at their breast and give them nourishment. And if I don't feed you, you starve. So you depend on me before you get here, and you depend on me when you do get here for life. So women have this natural inclination to nurture, and then when the child gets older, then it's not just nurture. They're off the breast now, but we have to hover, and we have to protect, and we have to mentor, and it becomes very invasive. Sometimes it becomes very fix-it oriented. When the kids get to be adults, we still have to fix. We still have to hover. It's not just women. I've spent my whole life. I grew up in a pastor's home. I knew from age 6 that I was going to be a minister. And I went to all the way through high school. What are you going to be when you grow up? I'll be a pastor. Yeah, but you cuss. I know, but I'll clean that up. I never did. Anyway, so I went to Christian college and studied what I needed to get in seminary. So I went to seminary. My whole life was on this track to be a pastor. And when you get into the ministry, You're supposed to be the one with all the answers, and you're supposed to be the one who knows. So people come to you, and if you don't know the answers, you just make something up. I mean, I did for years. I just make stuff up because you're the one supposed to know. So tell us, you know, tell us how to fix this situation, whatever. So I would. And anymore, man, if you come to me and I don't know, I'm going to tell you, I don't know. I'm not going to make that stuff up anymore. But we have people in church. We have people who, believers, we have people in Pathway who care so much. And so when we see somebody, we don't see them for who they truly are. We see them as somebody who needs to be fixed and somebody who needs to be healed and somebody who needs to be nurtured and somebody who needs to be hovered over and somebody who needs to be monitored 24/7. That's one of the liabilities of a recovery community. Everybody here is wounded. So those of us with any kind of a nurturing bone in our body, it's like, oh, I'll help you. I'll help you. I've got the answer for you. You know, we've got all the answers because, and it's not, I don't think it's so much out of arrogance. I think it really comes out of compassion. I really do. But sometimes we're so keen on fixing and nurturing that we really can't see them for who they are. We're looking, again, it's not as nasty and negative as this judicial lens, but it's still a blurry lens. Do you get what I'm saying? It's not nasty and negative. It's positive, and it's got compassion in it. But the idea is, all I see in you is your problems. All I see in you is your problems that I have a solution for. If you'll just take 5 minutes to listen, I'll give you the answer to your problem. I can do that. All this sounds so good, but when we're doing that, are we really seeing them? Are we really hearing them? Are we really listening to them? How many times, boy, we're getting down to honest stuff right here. How many times in group, midweek group, are you listening to somebody and say, how can I, in a very subtle, covert way, share the answer to their problem when it comes around to my turn? I won't name them. I won't even use the same words they say, but I'm going to say something to kind of help them a little bit because I'm so helpful and I'm so compassionate. Part of the magic of Pathway, part of the magic of recovery, is for somebody to be able to share their honest stuff and nobody else in the room have an agenda about that stuff. All you do is hear it and accept it. If they come later and say, it feels like you've dealt with this kind of stuff before, can we go out for coffee? I'd like to talk about it. That's a different thing. But this inclination inside of us, ooh, 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 I have the answer for your problem. Ooh, 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 please, you know, please. We're not seeing them. The hand in the air is distracting us. You see what I'm saying? The impulse to, I'll help you, is distracting us from being able to see them for who they really are. I think the first step of healing in a community like this is not for us to give each other advice or sage mentoring, you know, whatever. I think the first step to healing is just for them to know, I am being heard. And I am being seen. Period. Big fat period. I am being seen and I'm being heard. It's been really interesting as we've tried to introduce this approach to healing to the bigger church here at Broadway. Because most of y'all know we did the Wilderness series back during Lent, and now we're doing the Good Father series. And by the way, it's a strong rollover, if you know what I'm saying. A lot of the people from those groups rolled right back over into recovery groups. In fact, we're very well represented in the big church now. And, I mean, just what you were saying about Adam's preaching, we went to Greenwood this morning and heard Laura, and it was like she might as well just be bringing a Pathway message. It was just a... So as we're kind of infiltrating the big church, it's interesting for them to try to wrap their heads around, how does this healing thing work with you all? And I think we need to be ready to tell them it works by listening and watching, period. That's it. Not shoving a book in front of them, not saying, you need to watch this tutorial on YouTube or you need to watch this lecture so-and-so. Okay. No, just listen. I'm going to give you this time to share. I'm going to be fully involved in what you say and who you are. I'm going to see you for who you are. Can I share what I think this does? It's just a hunch. A person who has these painful things that they're ashamed of and they're afraid of in their life, when they share that and you see it and you hear it with no, ooh, I can help. You just see it and you just hear it. That gives them a level of respect they have never had. I have never been respected like this. You gave me 3 to 5 minutes to share my stuff, and you listened, and you looked, you watched me as I shared it. I've never been given this level of respect. That is rare in this world. And that's one thing that we have here that we can share, is that we can truly see people, and we may not say what Selleck said to the drug addict. We may not say, I see you, but our body language and our just the way we carry out what we do is sending a clear, clear message. You are being seen, and you are being heard, which translates to them, I am being respected, accepted, and loved. I've never had that. And part of what we're, I'm going to close with this, part of what we're discovering in this day and time here at Broadway and in this series that's being preached, this one thing, is the power, the transformative power of love. Love can do what the law never could do. That's what this series is saying. You've worked your whole life to be a good person. How's that working for you? It's not. Let God love you and see what happens. People say that sounds so apathetic and so lazy. Try it. It's the hardest thing you'll ever do. But when you let God love you, the magic starts to happen. That you just have to take my word for it. When we get to this place, you have to say, I don't know. I would say the same thing. I would say, I don't know. Just try it. Just try it. Because it will absolutely change your life.